Welcome to the belated President's Day edition of the Holy Crowley Hour, the only radio show where every day is President's Day. For those of you who prefer not to celebrate a holiday which honors an office that's been so debased by its current occupants, you might be asking yourself, what is the Holy Crowley Hour? Well, several years ago, a KBOO talk show caller made an accusation. She claimed that there were several late-night DJs at the station who belonged to an Aleister Crowley cult. And Aleister Crowley, for those of you who do not know, was a remarkable Englishman who lived from 1875 to 1947. He founded the religion of Thelema and styled himself a prophet leading humanity into a new age of self-realization. He was also accused by some of being a Satanist, and the press at the time denounced him as the wickedest man in the world. Those were more innocent times. And I should mention that our normal host is the immortal Ken Jones. He is on a top secret assignment. I can't say much. I shouldn't say anything. He's off in the Pyrenees somewhere. We are in the inner sanctum of Holy Crowley headquarters. There are no windows. There is no Wi-Fi here. There is only the radio signal. It is very analog. I am Conch. I'm here with Buzz. And I'm here with Grant as well. And I want to let you know that you might be wondering, is there any difference between Aleister Crowley and Carl Crowley? Well, Aleister Crowley's cult has but one commandment. Do what thou wilt. Carl Crowley's cult has but one commandment. Do what I tell you. And that's what the commandment we follow here in the Holy Crowley Hour is all about. Whatever Carl tells us to say and play on the show, that's what we say and play, because we do not want to trigger the terrible trapdoor in the inner sanctum of Holy Crowley headquarters. We do what we're told, and we have no voice in what you're about to hear. The programming is under Carl's complete control. However, I will say that it's fortunate for you, the listener, that Carl Crowley has impeccable taste. We'll be playing radio theater, podcast, comedy, novelty bits, and all sorts of live material, including work that Grant Corum has been working on. That is a very local event that's coming to a theater near you. And first, though, we want to start with an episode of The Mysterious Traveler, and it's called The Man Who Died Twice. And it is The Mysterious Traveler ran from December 1943 to September 52. It aired for most of its run on the Mutual Radio Network, Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. The sinister narrator with a voice like a cross between Orson Welles and Vincent Price, that's Maureen Tarplin. And this episode is a great example of radio noir. One of the main characters is played by a very young Art Carney. And so I want to tell you that from February 24th, 1948, enjoy this. This is The Man Who Died Twice.
Here, get on this mic, host.
The Man Who Died Twice.
Don't yell into it.
The Man Who Narrated Twice. And we're going to be going to this radio theater episode right now.
Okay. I'll let you work it.
Yes.
This is handmade radio here.
This is live without a net radio. And we are giving you the finest in archival material here right now.
Right here. It's more organ music.
Mutual presents The Mysterious Traveler.
This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as you hear the story I call The Man Who Died Twice. Tonight, we're going to delve into a murder most strange, one that confused many of the greatest legal minds of our day. My story begins in the mansion of Judge Marshall, situated high on a hill overlooking a large New England city. It is early evening, and Judge Marshall, one of the state's foremost jurists, is sitting in his library reading a legal brief. As he intently reads, the French door leading to the porch slowly and silently swings open, revealing a huge white-haired man standing in the doorway. His tremendous bent frame shows the remains of a man who'd been a giant in his youth. Suddenly, the judge becomes aware that he isn't alone. He quickly turns and sees his visitor.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
Don't you remember me, Judge?
No, I can't say that I do.
Think back. Think back 16 years when you were judge at a murder trial.
16 years? My good man, I presided over a great many murder trials, as you call them, and I still don't know who you are.
Just keep looking at me, Judge, and think back. Think back.
You do look familiar.
I'll help you remember. My name is Adams. Luke Adams.
Luke Adams? Yes, yes, now I remember. I sentenced you to prison for 25 years for killing a man.
yeah, for killing a man.
You've aged, so that's why I didn't recognize you.
Yes. It's hard to believe I'm only 45, isn't it?
I presume you've been paroled?
Yes.
What do you want?
I want to tell you my story, Judge. I want to tell you all the things I never got a chance to tell you at my trial.
As far as I'm concerned, Mr. Adams, the case is closed. Now, if you don't mind,
then we'll reopen it. I've come to tell you my story, and you're going to listen.
Very well, Mr. Adams. Sit down.
Thank you. I don't know if you recall, Judge, but my wife, Millie, was a beautiful woman.
Yes, I remember. She had the kind of beauty a man can't forget.
Yes. Yes, and I suppose that's what caused it all. Millie and I grew up together, and I guess I loved her from the moment we met. The only reason she married me was because of the money I'd inherited. And when I lost it in 29, things were never the same again between us. She hated living in a small village, trying to stretch $1 into two. Sometimes I think her smiling at other men was her way of getting revenge on me for the way we had to live. The angrier I got, the more she flirted, till she almost drove me out of my mind. Things went on like that, day after day, month after month.
Here comes Luke.
Hello, Luke. Getting home from work a bit early today, huh?
Yeah.
Your missus and I were just talking about how hot it is.
Yeah.
You must have found it fierce, breaking stone in the quarry in this heat.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've got to be going. See you again.
What was he hanging around for?
He just happened to be going past. Stopped to say hello. Is there anything wrong in that?
It's funny. Every time I see you talking to someone, it's always a man. How come I never see you talking to women?
Because all the women in this village are a bunch of cats. They hate me because I'm beautiful and they're not.
All right. But I'm warning you, I don't want to see Chuck Riker or any other men hanging around here. If I do, there's going to be trouble.
The days went by. Millie hardly spoke to me. Nothing I said or did seemed to please her. And yet, just knowing she'd be there when I got home was enough for me. And one day I come home from work. She wasn't alone.
Oh, hello, Luke.
Home early, aren't you?
What's he doing here?
Chuck was going past, dropped in to say hello.
Just like that, huh? I thought I told you not to let this happen again.
If Chuck wants to call on me, why shouldn't he? Right, Chuck?
Sure. After all, Luke, there's no use being old-fashioned. We've all known each other since we were kids. What harm is there in an old friend dropping in and... Why are you looking at me like that?
There's lipstick on your cheek. You'd better let me wipe it off for you.
Now, wait a minute, Luke. I can explain. There's no use fighting over...
Get up.
Now, wait a minute, Luke. Can't we...
Get up. Talking won't help. You'll have to fight your way out. That's it. Pick up that poker. Come on, come on. What are you waiting for?
Okay, you asked for it, and you're gonna get it. No. No, Luke, no.
This'll learn you...
No.
Not to hang around other men's wives. Before I'm through with you, no woman will want to look at you.
Luke, stop it. He's out on his feet. Stop it.
How does he look to you now, Molly? I'll throw him out, then you and I will settle a few things. Come on, you. Out you go. Here's a push to start you on your way. There. Now we come to you.
You think I'm afraid of you? Go ahead, hit me. Ruin my looks so no man will ever want to look at me. Go ahead.
Millie, don't talk like that. You know how much I love you. Why are you doing this to me? I know I haven't been able to give you all the things you want, but that's no reason to treat me this way. I won't stand for it, Millie.
All right, then, let's separate. You go your way, and I'll go mine.
No. No, I couldn't live without you. You know that. I'll never let you go. You're mine, do you hear?
Oh, stop it.
Millie, don't turn away
you
from me.
You make me sick.
All right. But I'll never give you up. Never. Millie just stood there looking at me, contempt in her eyes. I knew we were through, and yet I couldn't give her up. I clung to the small hope that something would happen that would change her, make her feel toward me as I felt about her. Long, lonely weeks went by. I knew that Millie and I had been the scandal of the village ever since the day I'd beaten Chuck Riker. At the quarry, the men whispered to each other when they thought I wasn't looking. And I could only give vent to my rage by smashing rocks into 1,000 small pieces. Then, one day in the autumn, an opportunity came. An opportunity to escape the villagers and their gossip. Millie! Millie, where are you?
Here. What is it?
Millie, you've always wanted to get away from the village. Now we have a chance.
How?
Well, I met Mr. Anderson this morning. You remember him. He's an old friend of my father's.
What about it?
Well, he owns a small farm which he's willing to sell for only $300 down.
You mean you want to buy it?
Yeah. Just think of it, Millie. A place of our own, 20 miles out in the country, away from the village and the gossip.
Do you really think I'd move to a farm? Cut myself off from everything?
Well, it's what you need, Millie. A home of your own, a place to work and build. You'd love it, Millie. I know you would.
You mean you would? Don't think I don't know what's going on in that head of yours. You want to cut me off from everybody, take me someplace where you can keep an eye on me day and night. Well, I'm not having any part of it.
But, Millie, you said yourself you're not happy here. That
yes,
you...
but I don't want a farm. I want to live in a city. I want to have everything that other women have.
But we can't go to the city. There's no work to be had. We're living in a depression.
Are we? Well, if you can't give me what I want, there are plenty of other men who can.
They'd better not try. I'm warning you, Millie, I'll kill any man who tries to take you away from me. Weeks went by. Weeks in which Millie scarcely spoke to me. We lived as strangers in an uneasy truce. I worked from dawn to twilight at the quarry, and as I worked, I could sense the men gossiping about Millie and myself. I would think of Millie and wonder what she was doing at that very moment.
Steve.
Yeah, baby?
I can't stand it anymore. I can't go on living with Luke. The way he stares at me with those big cow-like eyes of his, watching every move I make.
Well, you'll just have to go on putting up with it for the time being.
It's all right for you to say that. You don't have to live with him. Sometimes I wonder if you really love me.
Oh, don't talk like that, baby. You know I love you. Would I be putting my neck out like this if I didn't?
Nobody knows we're meeting secretly.
Maybe not, but sooner or later someone will see us together and then there'll really be trouble.
Afraid?
I've never run away from a fight yet. I don't mind telling you, I wouldn't like to mix with that gorilla husband of yours.
I know, Steve. You've got to be careful.
Don't worry, I intend to be. Just let me raise some dough, baby. Figure out one or two angles, then you and I'll be off for the big city.
What about Luke? He'd be sure to follow. You don't know what he's like, Steve. He'd never rest till he found us. And when he did...
Yeah, you don't have to draw me any pictures. I know that type. If we run off, we'd never have a minute's peace. We'd always be wondering when he was going to catch up with us.
Yes. Oh, Steve, what are we going to do?
I don't know, baby, I don't know. We'll just have to sit tight for the time being and be careful not to be seen together.
All right, Steve.
Oh, cheer up, baby. We'll make the big city yet, and until then, we've got this.
Oh, yes, Steve. Yeah.
Luke? Is that you?
Yeah, Millie. You want me?
Yes. I've moved all your things up to the attic. I want you to sleep there from now on.
Why?
Because you keep me awake half the night with your tossing and turning, and you talk in your sleep.
I talk in my sleep? What do I say?
You keep yelling my name as if I was murdering you or something.
Oh, Millie.
You'll be all right in the attic.
Yes, Millie. Millie, can I talk to you for a minute?
What is it?
I saw Mr. Anderson again today. Millie, he says he's willing to let us live free for a year on his farm so we can see how we like it. And if we do, we can buy it.
I told you before, I'm not going to live on any farm.
But, Millie, why can't we just try it? It won't cost us anything. If we don't like it, we can give it up.
No, I tell you, I won't let myself be trapped like that. You're perfectly willing to take a chance on farming, but you won't consider going to the city.
But there are 15 million men out of work. What chance would I have of getting a job in the city?
If you had an ounce of courage, you'd try. You don't hear men like Steve Hopkins whining about the Depression and trying to make excuses for staying in this miserable hole.
Steve Hopkins, huh?
I...
So that's it. You've been seeing Steve Hopkins?
No. No, I haven't been seeing. You're wrong, Luke.
You're lying. It's written all over your face.
I...
You're afraid, aren't you? You're afraid of what I'm going to do to Steve Hopkins?
Now, Luke, listen to me. I tell you, there's nothing between Steve and myself.
When I'm finished with him, you'll never want to look at him again.
Where are you going?
To the village tavern. He's always there on Saturday nights.
Luke, come back! Luke, come back!
Hopkins, I want to talk to you.
Well, go ahead, Luke. No one's stopping you.
You've been making a play for my wife, and I don't like it.
You're either drunk or looking for a fight. I haven't spoken to your wife in a year.
You're lying. I know you've been seeing her these past weeks while I've been working.
You better take it easy, Luke. You're getting to the point where you're suspicious of every man in the village.
Don't try to smooth talk me. I know you've been seeing her, and if you try seeing her again, I'll kill you.
You don't frighten me, Luke. And if I wanted to see your wife, not you or anyone else could stop me.
Oh, no? I'll show you.
Ready, boys. Grab it.
That's it.
Let go of me. Let go.
Hey, show him.
Hold on to him, boys. Now, Luke, as sheriff of this village, I'd advise you to take it easy.
I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
I don't like that kind of talk. Now, mind your manners. You'll spend a night in a lockup.
No man's going to make a fool out of me and live.
Now, get hold of yourself. If Steve was seeing your wife, it'd be common gossip in no time. You know that.
He may have fooled you folks, Sheriff, but I know better. You can protect him here, but just wait until I catch him alone. Just wait. I got home that night from the tavern. Millie was in her room, her door locked. I went up to the attic and tried to sleep, but I couldn't. I kept seeing Steve Hopkins' face, and the way he had smiled at me in the tavern. He might have fooled the others, but I knew. And he knew that I did. Hours later, I managed to fall asleep. I dreamt that I was alone with Steve, and we were fighting. He kept hitting me, but I couldn't feel his punches. All I could feel was my fist smashing again and again into his laughing face. I woke to hear church bells ringing. It was Sunday morning. All that day, except for meals, Millie avoided me. After supper, she went to her room, and I went down to my workshop in the cellar. The next morning, when I arrived at the quarry, the men were standing around in small groups, talking to each other. They stopped when they saw me. Then from one of the groups, I saw Sheriff Roden coming towards me.
Luke, I want to talk to you.
What about?
A number of things. Is your sledgehammer?
Why, sure. That's my initials on the handle. Why is it all wrapped up in paper?
I'll ask the questions, Luke. Where were you last night around 11 o'clock?
11 o'clock? In my workshop in the basement. Why?
Anybody with you?
Well, no, I was alone.
Luke, You're under arrest.
Under arrest? What for?
For the murder of Steve Hopkins.
For the murder of Steve Hopkins?
Yes. His body was found in his cabin an hour ago. He'd been brutally beaten to death last night around 11. With this sledgehammer, it was found at the scene of the crime.
You mean you think I did it?
It sure looks that way. Let's go, Luke.
No. No, I won't. I didn't kill Steve Hopkins.
You'll get your chance to prove you didn't. Now, let's go.
No! I didn't do it. I tell you, I'm innocent.
Grab him, man.
Let go of me.
That's it. Come on. Hold him while I get these cuffs on him.
I didn't do it. I tell you, I didn't do it.
Silence in the courtroom. Proceed, Mr. King.
Sheriff, will you tell the jury in your own words the time and circumstances under which you were notified of the death of Stephen Hopkins?
On October 12th of last year, I received a phone call at 7 o'clock a.m. from Sam Morris. Said that he'd just stopped by at Steve Hopkins' cabin to pick him up for work and had found him murdered. I told Sam not to touch anything. I got to the cabin 15 minutes later.
Will you tell the jury what you found?
Well, sir, that cabin looked like a slaughterhouse. I don't want to upset anyone with the details, so all I'll say is that Steve Hopkins had been beaten so badly, the body was beyond recognition.
You say the body was beaten beyond recognition.
That's right.
Then how were you able to identify it as being Steve Hopkins?
Well, first by the ring and wristwatch that was on the body. But most important of all, by the tattooing.
By the tattooing?
Yes, sir. Steve was quite a tattoo artist, and on his left arm he tattooed a heart with his initials and some girl's on it. I reckon just about everyone in this courtroom saw that tattoo on his arm at one time or another.
And although the body was beyond recognition, the tattoo was clearly identifiable.
Yes, sir. No question about that.
Sheriff, when had you last seen the deceased?
Saturday night, October 10th, at the Village Tavern.
Did anything unusual take place at the tavern that night?
Yes. Luke Adams came into the tavern around 9 o'clock. He accused Steve Hopkins of hanging around Mrs. Adams. Threatened to kill him.
Sheriff, can you remember Luke Adams' exact words when he made that threat?
Well, his last words before he left the tavern were, "Just wait till I catch him alone. Just wait."
I see. Now, Sheriff, when you arrived at the scene of the crime, did you find the death weapon?
Yes, sir. Steve Hopkins had been beaten to death with a sledgehammer. I found it in the cabin, covered with blood.
Was there any identification on the sledgehammer?
Yes, sir. On the handle were carved the initials, L.A.
Now, Mrs. Adams, you say there was no justification whatsoever for your husband's suspicions.
No, none at all.
In other words, he was mistaken when he accused Steve Hopkins of forcing his attentions on you.
Yes, he was.
I see. Now, your husband has testified that on the night of the murder, he was working in the cellar of your home. Where were you that night, Mrs. Adams?
Upstairs in my room.
Did you see your husband at all that night?
No, I didn't.
Would it have been possible for him to have left the cellar that night without your knowing about it?
Yes, it certainly would.
Silence in the courtroom. The prisoner will rise. Luke Adams, you have been found guilty of murder in the first degree, with a recommendation for mercy. The court hereby sentences you to 25 years imprisonment in the state penitentiary.
Yes, Judge, that was your sentence. The towering iron gates of the penitentiary closed behind me. And I no longer had a name, only a number. A year after I was in prison, I was informed that Millie had divorced me and disappeared. With that, my last tie with the outside world was gone. Years passed. World-shaking events took place and scarce reached the prison workshop, for I spent long days repairing shoes. Then one day I was notified by the warden that I'd been paroled. I was free. The gates of the penitentiary opened, and once again I joined the living. I came to the city, a stranger, and found employment in a shoe repair store. Day after day, I stood by the store window repairing shoes, watching the hurrying crowds. Then late one afternoon, I saw a woman pass. A woman who was a stranger, and yet wasn't. With a sudden shock, I realized that Millie had just passed. Throwing down my tools, I rushed out of the shop and down the street after her. I found her in the crowd and followed. She had hardly changed at all in the 16 years that had gone by. There were streaks of gray in her hair, but she was as beautiful as ever. I followed her block after block, and soon we were in a residential section. She turned up the path to a large cottage, unlocked the front door, and went in. A moment later, I was ringing the doorbell.
Yes, what is it?
Don't you recognize me?
No, I'm afraid not.
It's me, Millie, it's me.
How dare you force your way in here like... Luke.
Yeah, Millie. Luke, after all these years...
What, you're in prison?
I was paroled 6 months ago.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Luke. You must leave now. I'm busy right now. I can't
Millie,
talk.
Who is that?
I...
Millie, who are you talking to? Who's he?
Steve. Steve Hopkins.
Oh, you're mistaken. The name is Reed. Robert Reed.
Steve, it's Luke.
Luke? You're not dead. You're not dead. The body in the cabinet wasn't yours.
No. No.
I went to prison for your murder, but you're alive. I said I killed you, but you're alive.
Yes.
You let them put me in prison. You framed me.
Luke, you must listen to me.
You framed me.
No, Luke, don't. I didn't...
You framed
Luke,
me.
Luke, let go of him. Let go of him.
Don't, Luke. Don't.
Whose body was that they found in your cabin?
A young hobo I picked up by the railroad tracks.
But the tattooing on the arm.
After I'd killed him with your sledgehammer, I tattooed his left arm to look exactly like mine. I put my wristwatch and ring on the body and then beat him beyond recognition.
And then you ran away, leaving me to stand trial for murder.
Luke, what are you going to do?
What am I
going
to do? You remember Judge Marshall, don't you, Millie?
Yes, I remember him.
Well, I read in the papers a few weeks ago that the judge lives here in a fine mansion overlooking the city.
What are you getting at?
Steve and I are going to visit Judge Marshall.
No, Luke, no. You know what that would mean.
Luke, we have some money. If you'll just forget what's happened, we'll give you money, plenty of it.
Yes, we'll give you $10,000. $20,000.
I'm not interested in money. Come on, Steve.
Luke, you can't do this to me. You can't.
Luke, you once loved me for my sake.
Come along, Steve.
No, I won't go. If they find out about that hobo, they'll hang me. I wouldn't have a chance.
You'll come, Steve, one way or another, I understand.
Yes. Yes.
He didn't want to come here, but in the end, he came. In the end, he came.
Incredible. Simply incredible. The man is a monster to have done what he did. Where is this man, Steve Hopkins, now?
He's out on the porch, Judge.
Bring him in, Mr. Adams. I want to see that man.
All right, Judge.
Why are you carrying him?
He can't walk.
Can't walk? What's wrong with him?
He's dead. Here, Judge.
Dead?
Yes, Judge.
But I understood he was alive.
He was. up until a half hour ago.
You mean you...
Yeah, Judge. I put my hands around his throat and squeezed. Squeezed until he was dead. Huh. I killed him. And there's nothing you can do to me, Judge. Nothing. Remember, you sent me to prison for killing Steve Hopkins? For 16 years, I rotted in prison. I've paid my debt to society for Steve Hopkins' death. I've paid it. There's nothing you can do to me now. Nothing.
This is the Mysterious Traveler again. Did you enjoy our little trip? What happened to Luke Adams? Well, his case became one of the most celebrated controversies of the day. Some legal minds claimed he couldn't be sent to prison again. He'd already been punished. Other legal experts insisted he should be tried again. But in the midst of this raging controversy, poor Luke Adams died, and his case was never decided. What do you think? Should Luke Adams have been tried for murder again? Or having already served 16 years for Steve Hopkins' murder, should he have gone free? I should like to know what your verdict is. Send your letters to the Mysterious Traveler, care of Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18, New York.
You are listening to the Holy Crowley Hour. I am Conch. I am here with Buzz, Bill Dodge. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
That was here with Grant Corum as well.
Holy moly.
And, oh, scary stuff, kids. We are telling mysterious tales of the strange and terrifying the Mysterious Traveler.
How do you do that? And then after that, we heard John Wayne's drunken commencement speech from celebrities at their worst. And we know how ridiculous it was.
It was goddamn ridiculous. But The Mysterious Traveler, it aired on the Mutual Radio Network on Sunday evenings. That particular one was from 1948. To be particular, February 24th of 1948. Ooh, scary. It's the very same day as today. But yeah, that was...
That is interesting.
That was the man who died twice. And...
I did once. Three times.
Cowards die many times, but heroes only once. So we're here with Grant Corman. Grant, tell us a little bit about the music that's happening behind us. You are our special guest tonight.
Yes. Well, thanks for having me.
Yes.
The music right now that's playing is by White Gourd.
Oh, my goodness.
It's in a... works in a... ritualistic, tarot, multidimensional sound and saxscapes.
And we are delighted to have Grant here with us because Grant is the brains behind Psychic Sounds. And this is a label. This is a label here in town. And you work very closely with our good friend Eric from Mississippi Records, Eric Isaacson.
Yes.
Who has, he has a store. He has, he's put people on his label. He's put out records. He's had screenings at the Hollywood Theater. And you're going to have a screening at the Hollywood Theater.
Indeed. Yes, it's a pretty exciting event. Mississippi Records is going to be hosting alongside Church of Film. And there's going to be collage created as a backdrop in addition to Eric giving a pretty wild overview slideshow to open the evening, and there will be live short sets by a variety of musicians traveling from all over the United States and locally.
Yeah, tell us about some of the musicians. You have had a chance to interact with all of these folks, and there's some pretty good outsider music. There's international music. There's folks who have been undiscovered until, well, we hope they will be discovered on Thursday evening at the Hollywood Theater.
Indeed, yeah. Well, locally we have the Lavender Flu, some woodwind rockers from the area. Then there's the Tenses Trio, which is Oblivia and Juke Suk Meet Reet of the Smegma crew.
Yeah, and we are good friends with Mike Lastra, who is a producer. He is actually not only the person who tends to do the sound engineering and production for Smegma, but he also is a person who's done many documentaries about the music scene here in Portland.
Oh, indeed. Yes, it's pretty exciting to be alongside of all of these folks. And on top of that, we're going to be having White Gourd from Midcoast, Maine. Idaho Joe Winslow coming up from the Bay Area.
Yeah, now, Idaho Joe, he is not just an outsider musician. He is a person with some crazy backstory material. You have hung out with the man. You have seen him create stuff. You have seen him hop freights. You have seen him do all sorts of amazing, tell amazing stories, do amazing things.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, just recently he had me strap a amplifier with duct tape to a gong and dip it inside a giant vat of water in order to capture some of the sounds he was going for. And he'll be appearing with Abalone Shell Headdress in this recent time. Before that, he was completely covered with a cacti all over his head that was shellacked. And I'm not sure what he's going to be bringing this time, to be honest.
Okay, this sounds like a pretty much don't-miss kind of event. And tell us about when this is going to happen.
Oh, yes, it's on Thursday, and I highly recommend it. There's also going to be a professional set designer here from in town, James Tate, who's going to be providing inflatable light totems in addition to the aquatic ambience of the Inspired School of Astral Music.
Okay, and this is all going to be just curated by you and Eric Isaacson of Mississippi Records?
Indeed, and then also Church of Film will be curating the visual side of things, too.
Okay, tell us a little bit about Church of Film. They have been doing material for a very long time here in Portland at various venues. Clinton Street Theater is one, Psychic is another, various venues that you don't necessarily think of as places to project film or video.
Yeah, they're fantastic. It's like Muriel and Leslie both bring a pretty deep archive that they pluck from, and they find remote locations and are highly active, and it's all really, really wild, top-notch stuff.
A lot of folklore, a lot of animation I've seen, like they have Japanese folklore, Russian animation, things like that. So this is all going to go down Hollywood Theater Thursday the 27th. And at what time now?
It starts at 9 o'clock.
Starts at 9. Okay. Is it going late?
I imagine it would go till about 11. It's a pretty grand performance, but people can come and go. But I have a feeling once folks get in there, it's going to be hard to let the brains detach from what's happening.
Okay. So do you think people might want to get advanced tickets on this?
I would recommend it. It seems like it's going that direction. So.
And that would be hollywoodtheatery.org?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
So what we're going to do, Mr. Bill here.
Yes.
We're gonna come back and talk with Grant Corum a little bit more. But first we want to do, we want to get silly here. So
okay.
What are we going to get? We're going to do some silly stuff here.
Would you like Coil and Sharp or Zero Mostel? We have all sorts of flavors tonight.
Let's, in the spirit of events right here, let's do some Zero Mostel. It's the Holy Crowley Hour, and you're
okay.
Listening to... I'm filling in. I'm Conch. I'm filling in with Bill Dodge, who is working the board. Grant Corum is here. And we're going to have some Zero Mostel here. We're going to have some classic comedy.
Got it roughly 12 minutes to go until the next program. And thanks for listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
USA, the same as many others, just like my dad and mother were, my sister and my brother were. I love every inch of it. There is not a day that I don't remember to say, God bless Pennsylvania, North and South Dakota, East and West Virginia, and good old Idaho. See that the morning dew sets on Vermont and Massachusetts. God bless Minnesota, Michigan, and Texas, New York and Nebraska, and old New Mexico. Other states to be blessed are Maine and Mississippi, and those in the West where cowboys holler yippee. I was born one Monday morning, good old Iowa, but God bless every state in the USA. Bless New Hampshire and New Jersey, Alabama and Connecticut. Bless Montana, Indiana, Louisiana, also Tennessee. Bless Kentucky and Ohio, Colorado, dear old Delaware. Though it's not a state you gotta, bless the district of Columbia. Now Alaska and Hawaii make it 50. Maybe Puerto Rico will make it 51. Other states, large and small, are too numerous to mention, but please give them all the best of your attention. I've never been in Florida or California, but God bless, God bless, God bless every state in the USA.
A little geography lesson there with Zero Mostel. And, you know, why shouldn't Puerto Rico be a state along with D.C.? Add a couple of states. That's what I say. The more, the merrier. We are here. This is the Holy Crowley Hour. I'm Conch. I'm here with Bill Dodge.
Holy Crowley.
Holy Crowley. And we are filling in for Ken Jones, who is on a very secret mission. We shouldn't say any more than we already have, but I think... I think when you next month when Ken is back, I think you're gonna have lots of interesting material to work with, because he's gonna be chock-a-block with all kinds of interesting things from his secret mission. You know, he's out there in the Pyrenees. We are here with Mr. Grant Corum, and he is the brains behind Psychic Sounds, the label here in Portland that we are delighted to have. Speaking of geography, speaking of Zero Mostel, international acts, international musicians, unknown people, outsider material on your label.
Just a variety of who's all on it, or
sure. It's just you have not been asleep at the wheel in the last 10 years. You have put out dozens of albums, and they have all been just amazing. And for people who believe in archival music as well as new music, this is the place to go. Is Psychic Sounds?
Sure. Yeah. Reissues and just kind of seeking various obscure musicians. But yeah, Maya Deren's Divine Horseman.
Maya Deren, for those who don't know, is one of the most amazing avant-garde filmmakers of the 1940s, 50s, 60s. She died too early.
Indeed.
But she did some amazing sort of like early pre-Freudian, Jungian kind of very, very, very non-narrative films.
Surrealist films.
Yeah, fantastic. And some of the other ones that are in reissues is the Gurdjieff harmonium work, Delia Derbyshire's Dreams.
Oh, Delia Derbyshire, who is, most people might know her best as the brains behind the Doctor Who theme. because this was early synthesizer. It wasn't even a synthesizer at this point. It was just basically some sort of like crazy waveform monitors that she had somehow made to put out sound that in the early 60s created the Doctor Who theme.
Yeah, I think if I saw right, it might have been four tape loops.
Oh, wow.
That were just linked up, two bass lines and two melodies or something. But yeah, it's pretty wild that she was doing that early. It's pretty inspirational. And some of the other reissues have been the Talhoun Gesese, Ethiopian soul singer that influenced Mahmoud Ahmed and many others. As far as contemporary, is White Gourd, Million Brazilians, Ambassador Dolgun out of Chile, Santiago, Adele H. out of Milan, and Inspired School of Astral Music, who we're listening to right now, and Million Brazilians, a lot of really...
And you mentioned Idaho Joe Winslow, who you've had many encounters with, and is going to be at the Hollywood Theater on this Thursday evening, the 27th. He's going to be there in person. You get to actually just like get up close and personal with a man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's going to be all kinds of surprises and folks running amok, and even Zoltar the Inhaler is going to be there. So
who else is going to be there?
Well, Million Brazilians is the other one I didn't mention, which is actually a band that I started 13 years ago with some folks, and this is the first time in 8 years we're going to be reunited just for this show with the original four members.
Wow.
And, yeah.
So this is going to be a full multimedia experience. Anything could go wrong, anything could go right.
Yes.
Yeah. And there will be a material on the screen in various formats, and then live music on the stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And who knows who may show up to bring some mad hijinks. That's about all I'll say.
Okay, so again, the website to go to find out more is it Hollywood Theater with an RE.org, or is it also, do we go to Mississippi Records? Where do we go?
Yeah, Hollywood Theater with RE, right, with a .org, yep.
Right, okay. And you find out more about that. And Psychic Sounds, how can people find out more about Psychic Sounds if they want to maybe get more acquainted with some of the acts that you have been recording onto your label?
Psychicsounds.com. And there's a catalog page and a lot of links, and it's a little bit of a labyrinthian maze to check out. You can even go to the Votive Transmutation Shrine and check out that as well.
And if somebody is listening to us out on the East Coast, you actually are bicoastal.
We are.
You're like in two Portlands at once, is that right?
It's true. Yeah, we're tucked away there in mid-coast Maine, all the way from Portland to Portland.
So you have been listening to the Holy Crowley Hour here. Thank you again to our host, to our guest, Grant Corum. I'm gonna make you the host. I'm gonna make you the honorary host here.
Well, I've got my Typhonian right. Cobra hat
because
on here.
I'm tired of being the host, so why not? Yes, you can be the, you can be that. But yeah, if there's even the slightest possibility, I'm just saying right now to all our listeners out there, if there's the slightest possibility that you liked what you heard, you can tune in every fourth Monday of the month from 11 p.m. to midnight, and you can stream and download previous episodes from our Holy Crowley Hour page on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. This is SW Concert. I have been doing this with Bill Dodge. We're filling in for regular Holy Crowley Hour host Ken Jones, and we won't say any more. We hope that Ken Jones makes it back in one piece from where he is.
Yes.
Ken will be back again next month if he makes it back, Monday, March 23rd, 2020 at 11 p.m. In the meantime, we'll be heading outside the KBOO studios in this cold, crisp air to catch a ride back to Carl Crowley headquarters in Beaverton, hopefully just in time to catch the second and final season of the classic TV sitcom Hello, Larry, now out on Blu-ray from the Criterion Collection in a very limited edition. Bill.
Yes,
say goodnight, Bill.
Goodnight. We've been listening to Grant Corum's album. You want to say something about that before we get out of here?
Oh, the recording's on here? Or?
Yeah. Oh, we're listening to this in the background or bed.
We're currently listening to the Psychic Sounds Ensemble shaking it up with some of the sci-fi exotica drink. And I just want to thank you both for having me.
Well, thank you. And stay tuned. Coming up here in a moment or two, Lady Danger does her thing until 2 a.m. It's KBOO in Portland.